Are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Don't know what to get your loved ones this season? Check out kboo.fm/merch to snag some KBOO swag to support community media in style. While you're shopping for gifts, you can make donations to help support KBOO's $75,000 goal for our KBOO Fights Back campaign now through December 31st.
Tune in KBOO this Monday, December 15th at 11 p.m. as Gremlin Time once again presents Catherine Dunn reading the Father Christmas letters.
The interest and importance of Father Christmas extended beyond his filling of their stockings on Christmas Eve, for he wrote a letter to them every year, in which he described in words and pictures his house and his friends and the events, hilarious or alarming, at the North Pole.
So tune in KBOO this Monday at 11 p.m. as Catherine Dunn reads the Father Christmas letters by J.R.R. Tolkien.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from the Bureau of Labor and Industries Child Care for Construction, working to provide resources and support for construction apprentices registered with the state of Oregon, in partnership with Business Oregon. More info at oregon.gov/BOLI/apprenticeship under the link Financial Assistance for Registered Apprentices.
Welcome to Labor Radio on KBOO Portland. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilland.
Thank you so much for joining us. We would first just like to give a special thanks and shout out to the Labor Radio Podcast Network for hosting podcasted versions of our show each month. Be sure to check that out at laborradionetwork.org. And before we get started, I wanted to let you all know that we're in the middle of our KBOO Fights Back campaign, focused on uplifting community voices and fighting for our rights. KBOO has been on the air for over 57 years, making us one of the oldest community radio stations in the country and one of the longest standing media institutions here in Portland. And we've been able to remain a commercial-free, volunteer-powered resource for this community because of the support from amazing people like you. And now, more than ever, we turn to our community to keep the mission alive and help us supplement the $110,000 that we lost in federal funding due to Congress's vote to cut federal grants for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. So, if you can, please help us reach our $75,000 fundraising goal by becoming a member today. You can just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. We here at Labor Radio thank you so much for your support. So we are at a moment of intense economic uncertainty and rising insecurity. I mean, everyone is feeling that across the economy. To highlight that, you know, unemployment claims have recently risen sharply, which is signaling, you know, more layoffs and growing instability throughout the economy. For the week ending in December 6th, new unemployment claims jumped to 236,000, which is an increase of 44,000 from the previous week. That is according to figures from the U.S. Labor Department. That's also signals the largest jump in nearly 4.5 years, which, you know, if you go back to it, that is right in the middle of the pandemic era, where there was incredible economic insecurity and, you know, people being laid off across the board. So that's a pretty staggering number.
Yeah, well, and to be, you know, just to kind of be a little bit cheeky to Silicon Valley, it was both an era of uncertainty and also apparently we're still trying to address how much hiring they did from that time period. So it was a little bit of both, right? It was a lot of layoffs and then it was also apparently a bunch of overhiring.
Yeah.
You know, these types of numbers you don't really get to without an Amazon laying off 14,000 people or, you know, some of these companies doing things like that.
Yeah, of course. Like you really only get there with the biggest companies having mm-hmm. that many workers to be able to lay off and still exist. But yeah, I mean, all of that really does highlight that we're in a very uncertain economic time and workers are definitely feeling it the most. You know, I mean, so that like on top of all that, like private sector job data shows net losses and small businesses are shedding workers incredibly fast. The payroll processing company ADP reported that small businesses are shedding workers at the fastest clip since nearly 2023. Since early 2023. And in this past August, there was job growth was about 70% lower than it was a year prior to that in 2024. And it was, you know, with only 22,000 jobs added in that entire month. So that is, you know, dismally small compared to the previous year and to years prior to that. Unemployment hit a multi-year high of 4.3%, which, you know, obviously a lot of that is factored in to the numbers. You know, there's always a level of unemployment in the economy, and that's just sort of assumed. But 4.3% mm-hmm. is a incredibly high number for what it, you know, what it typically was, especially pre-pandemic times yep. or even during the Biden administration.
Yeah, and it's high for the statistic it is, which is kind of an imperfect calculation yeah. of it, right? You know, people that have given up, people that have a part-time job and maybe aren't looking for full-time yeah. but would like full-time, you know, these aren't calculated in a lot of these statistics. And so, you know, even for the known issues that it has, it's quite high.
Yeah, that's a great point. Because, like, yeah, none of it doesn't factor in the large swath of people that are just not even participating in
giving
the job.
Up.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, so then if you look at it beyond 4.3%, which is reported, it's going to be so much higher.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, in August, the Trump administration fired the head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics, who was responsible for producing these jobs reports. So, like, it is not a coincidence that we saw this incredible spike in unemployment numbers come out in August, and then the administration went, well, we don't like that, so we are just going to get rid of the person who is telling us, you know, the messenger, rather than, you know, dealing with the underlying problem. Mm-hmm. And of course, since then, the fact that, like, they have put in a new a commissioner to the Bureau of Labor Statistics who is putting out these reports that are, you know, likely going to be a little more favorable to the administration, and the fact that we're still getting an incredibly high unemployment number like that from those reports says that it is probably even worse than we imagined based on those numbers. And so, you know, on top of all that, hiring has slowed across multiple sectors of the economy, especially those employing lower and middle income workers, which is the vast majority of people working in this country. And so with all of that, worker confidence is, you know, especially low. And there are fewer people feeling secure enough to quit jobs or to expect better opportunities when looking elsewhere from their current job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, we don't always, you know, love to dig into, like, you know, there's other parts of the network that are going to cover a lot of things like this. But I think the important thing to understand is when we see metrics like this, to remember kind of where we've been over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
So much of the recent growth in the labor movement was because of the hiring that happened kind of post the early kind of difficulties of the pandemic,
yeah.
and how much power the worker had and how it felt like we were taking back these things. And so it's important to remember, and it's easy to say when you have a job and you're not looking, but like, these are the sorts of environments that lead to all of the stuff that we fought for being taken away, right? When people are less willing to take stands and feel less secure in the economy, it's a recipe for you know, people to be brought on in situations that are just worse for them.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, I think that is a great point, that basically all of this is kind of, you know, there was a recovery under Biden, under the Biden administration, but like all of this is kind of just in the afterglow of the incredible worker power moment that was the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the pendulum shifted in one direction over the course of like the Obama era and then the, you know, the Biden era. And now it is unfortunately shifting heavily back in the other direction.
Yeah. And I think, labor analysts and union people, probably there is plenty to complain about with Biden, but we are in a completely different situation from the president, like being on the picket lines, right? Doing photo ops. Now, some people might claim they were very performative. But he was also there.
At least he felt the need to be there.
Yeah. And you know, I think people can forget sometimes, like the railroad union, right? There were a bunch of like very like seismic events that were kind of averted. And you know, when you have a leadership that is kind of unsure moment to moment what they're going to do, and kind of the only thing they are sure about is that workers need to make less and have less benefits. I mean, this is the kind of the situation that occurs.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Like the one thing that they seem to be sure about is that they need to attack the rights of working people. You know, they need to make it so that people are squeezed more and more. Like that is the only thing that when you take all of this in the aggregate, like everything that all of the executive orders, all of the policy changes and everything that the Trump administration has done and all of the ways that tariffs and stuff have hit the economy, the one thing that it all points to is that the idea is to squeeze working Americans more and more. That's like what the end result of all this is. This is not a new trend, but like with all of the numbers that we're seeing, there is an incredible spike in the number of people that are having to take on second jobs or take on gig work, like driving nights for Uber and stuff like that, just to make ends meet. And that is in no way the sign of a healthy economy when people cannot support themselves on one single job or feel the need to, you know, sell off their space or their time additionally on top of a regular job just to be able to keep the quality of life that they've had prior.
Absolutely.
To that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, again, like flowing right from that, we have that the cost of living on top of just the job insecurity has gone up incredibly. Prices for essential goods like food and housing and, you know basic utilities, obviously healthcare, just continue to strain household budgets. You know, all of that has gone up. Like, just go to the grocery store. That's a thing you're going to see right away, that the prices have just increased exponentially in the last year or so. Healthcare costs obviously continue to always go up. And so all of that just puts more pressure on workers to, go out and find a second job if necessary just to stay afloat. And on top of all that, as the thing we've talked about on this show, you know, so many times, wages have not kept pace with the increasing cost of living or the cost of everything in this country. And so that just all of that leaves so many workers worse off than they were, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, whatever it is, even though they might still be fully employed. Like, you might have a full-time job that has, you know, decent pay and benefits, and you're still, everyone is feeling the pinch right now.
Well, and I was just going to say too, you know, with so many layoffs in the tech sector and kind of all over the place, right? And the jobs report kind of showing, just the amount of net new creation that's not there. I think the other thing that's important to call out too is, you know, the work is still there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what we find, you know, talking to people in times like this, and you know, they'll do surveys and things like that, is typically, you know, you're making the same amount and you're doing the work of two people. Mm-hmm. So you know, it's a difficult time out there for folks, you know, not just from an affordability standpoint, but, you know, there's other parts to life than affordability. What's your work-life balance? These sorts of things. So the worker is in a interesting point right now.
Yeah. Yeah. There are other elements to it than just like the pay. And that is like the stress of doing the job. Like,
the work doesn't go away, right? Yeah, when they do layoffs, it's the same amount of output, mm-hmm. right? So it falls to the, you know, the survivors.
Right. I mean, you brought up earlier, like the massive railroad, the potential for the railroad strike during the Biden administration.
Yeah.
And that was largely due to the fact that like these railroad companies were cutting the amount of people on the crews and expecting them to continue. It's not like they were shrinking the size of the trains or reducing the amount of
shipping less.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah. Like, it was just reducing the number of people having to do all of the work. And that led to more stress for the individual workers that were still there, and just like a reduction in the actual overall safety of doing that job and the service they were providing. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, that's just a good, you can sort of take that and replicate it across the economy. And you see that kind of same thing workers being squeezed for productivity while not seeing an increase in their pay or benefits. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that's a story as old as time, but it is very much something that we are seeing right now. And you know, workers' confidence in the economy has also fallen off sharply. Like that's no surprise, just looking at, you know, gesturing broadly towards everything. But there's, you know, there was a recent survey that showed that only 21% of working Americans said that they felt excellent or good about the state of the economy, while 40% of them said it was poor, you know, quote, poor.
Yeah.
And Gallup, there was, according to these Gallup surveys, the planned holiday spending has dropped from about $1,000 to $778 on average across American working American families. And just to give you an understanding of like what that drop actually means, that is the largest drop ever recorded in such surveys, and it even outpaces the that same drop that existed during the height of the 2008 financial crisis. So if that, you know, that's just one metric, but like, and that is just survey based, but still, if you look at those numbers, that means that confidence in the economy or the ability for Americans to spend or their confidence in being able to spend in this holiday time is exponentially worse than it was during the worst economic downturn of all of our lives. You know, unless you were someone who was alive during the Great Depression, which, you know, incredible. Like some, if you're like Dick Van Dyke, who is turning like 100 some odd years old right now, that's amazing for you. But beyond that, that was the worst economic downturn we'd ever seen. And there's indicators flashing red telling us that it's worse now than it was in 2008. So, you know, unsurprisingly, low-income households have reported the steepest spending cutbacks, averaging about $267 less than earlier expectations for holiday spending.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of folks would admit that a lot of these numbers, too, have kind of been propped up by extra spending this year from higher income families and higher income earners. And, you know, we kind of talk about it always around this time of year, but, you know, a lot of this kind of going into debt or spending what you don't have is actually part of what makes all of this go, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. The person buying a Kia, you know, at the holiday sales event is actually keeping this whole thing afloat.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think, right, and people typically will continue to spend a lot of the time, right? It's why inflation is so important, right? Because your money is literally losing value in your pocket.
Yeah.
So it incentivizes you to spend. And so, you know, a lot of these numbers are quite, they're quite scary, I think, from my opinion, because again, it's not like these lower income families spending actually is what's helping everybody do better, right? And they themselves are not doing well, and we need them to be spending money.
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right. Like most of the spending does come from the people who have the money, and then the people
being propped up, they're just spending more than normal.
Exactly.
Or they have been. Yeah. But you know, even the Gallup poll that you or the Gallup survey that you were just talking about, the higher income earners are expected to spend less than they did last year. So, you know, they've kind of been this year propping it up, and maybe you know, they've hit a breaking point as well.
And if, you know, the one area where things do trickle down, like if the highest earners are spending less, that trickles down, says that, you know, the middle earners are spend less, and the people who the lowest earners are going to spend so much less. So all of that, you know, in aggregate just points to a very uncertain and shaky economy, which then of course leads to a very uncertain and shaky job market and, you know, workplace conditions and all the things that go into affecting the lives of working Americans. And, you know, just along with that, there just as another indicator of the weakness of this economy, the Federal Reserve has, you know, again, cut rates, and that reflects a slowing growth and like labor market weakness. And this is actually the third consecutive term where they have reduced rates, which has now brought, you know, them to their lowest level since 2022. All of that is aimed at supporting a cooling job market, but rate cuts alone don't raise wages. And they certainly don't improve job security for workers or, you know, increase opportunities for workers. So, you know, that is one mechanism that is being pulled to try and counterbalance this. But again, all of that just goes to show that, like, the indicators for a, you know, what is an unstable economy are flashing red right now. Just quickly, we will take a short break here. But if, you know, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Labor Radio here on listener-supported KBOO Community Radio. We'll get back to our discussion in just a moment. But first, I want to drop a quick reminder that KBOO is in the middle of our KBOO Fights Back campaign, focused on uplifting community voices and letting the silence be heard. We only have a few days left to reach our $75,000 fundraising goal, so please consider showing your support. You can become a member today at kboo.fm/give, or if you're using the KBOO mobile app, just click on the donate button. It's a big red button there. Thank you for supporting community-powered radio, and we will now get back to our discussion here. So, yeah, all of these things are, you know, indicating that the economy is in a shaky place and the job market is in a shaky place, and all of that leads to insecurity and weakness for working Americans. Now, to, you know, pile on top of that, in this uncertain and unstable economic climate, collective bargaining really does become so much more important. You know, it's always important for working people, for the power of working people, but in unstable economic times, a thing that people can rely on, or like a backstop to sliding working conditions, is union power and collective bargaining power. And weak economies, worker leverage, you know, outside of unions really declines. And so people within unions do sort of bolster, keep, you know, workers' rights in place. And, you know, unions historically do protect workers from layoffs and wage erosion. Not always, but that is sort of the role that they play. But despite all this, or probably more specifically because of this, the Trump administration has now moved to strip bargaining rights from hundreds of thousands of federal workers. So back in March, Trump issued an executive order 14251, which basically removed collective bargaining rights from workers at over 30 federal agencies, you know, doing so citing national security concerns, which, you know, is dubious at best. But that really, that affects workers at the following departments: the Veterans Affairs Department, the Department of Defense, or the Department of War, I guess now, the Justice Department, the Treasury, the Environmental Protection Agency, the IRS, Homeland Security, Agriculture, Health and Human Services, the Energy Department, and, you know, there are more to that list, but, you know, I'll leave it there. But the thing is that list notably includes workers that work beyond frontline security roles. So the concept of using national security as the reason for that does really kind of be it's undermined by the list of the, you know, the breadth of the people that are affected by this. And now that executive order strips bargaining rights from 3/4 of all unionized federal workers. And that is, you know, a huge swath of the workforce there. And it allows management to unilaterally change working conditions without worker input, or to bypass negotiated contracts altogether. And it's important to remember that with this, that the largest sector of the American economy that is unionized are federal workers, are government workers. Like, not just federal workers, but government workers across the board. But the federal workforce is so huge that them being the largest unionized sector of the economy has always been a thing that the right and the anti-union folks have wanted to go after. They wanted to break the back of the unions by going after federal and government workers and unionized workers in that sense. And so this is, of course, like an end run by the anti-union right to attack the power of collective bargaining across the board for Americans by going after the strongest sector unionized in our society. Now, the administration has, on top of all that, now moved to terminate the collective bargaining agreement covering roughly 47,000 TSA workers, the officers that do security for you at the airport. The Department of Homeland Security said it would implement new labor framework on January 11th of next year, of 2026, and would no longer be collecting union dues from TSA officers' paychecks. So that effectively, you know, that's like right to work, essentially. That kills the ability of the union to exist, essentially. Mm-hmm. Now, this means workers, they're going to lose protections over scheduling, discipline, and workplace conditions, as well as any ability to, you know, collectively bargain for increased benefits or pay and things like that. The union representing these workers, American Federation of Government Employees, or AFGE, has called this more illegal suppression. The president of the union released a statement saying, quote, "Secretary Noem's decision to rip up the union contract for 47,000 TSA officers is an illegal act of retaliatory union busting that should cause concern for every person who steps foot in an airport," end quote. And yeah, I think that's a great point, because ultimately undermining the workforce that does security, like whether or not TSA was created as a result of 9/11.
Yeah.
There are a lot of, things that came out as a result of the Patriot Act in the shadow of 9/11 that people rightfully question. But one thing you don't want to question is like the need for security at airports and how much better it is for all of us to fly, knowing that there is a workforce doing that job, doing the security screening, that is happy and comfortable and like not overly stressed. You know, the same thing would be true of pilots or something like that. But like, this just directly affects every single American, because we all have to travel to a certain degree.
Yeah.
And this is a direct attack on all of our safety.
Yeah. And I think too, right, if the conversation is about should the TSA exist, I think that's a really different conversation than trying to use executive orders to go around the legislative branch control on the budget.
Yeah.
Right. Like, which is kind of like what we're talking about here, because I mean, really, this is all just, you're setting it up to knock down the pins. Right. Yeah. So, I think that's what kind of rubs me more the wrong way than it is like the majesty or the aura of the TSA itself.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
But that's not to say that there isn't value there, but it's more just like, these are just not how these conversations are meant to be had. Mm-hmm. And, I think up and down, we've talked about on the show so much about how, it's really on the courts right now to help us kind of navigate these muddied waters. And, previous presidents would allow that stuff to happen before they take action. And right now, that's just not what we're getting with Trump Vance.
No, we are not. And yeah, like, as you said, this is just indicative of the larger playbook, in effect here, of basically working around the traditional frameworks for things to just directly attack, the institutions across the board of our, like, that hold up our society, but really to attack working people. Like, that is just kind of the whole point of all of this. And so it's no surprise that they would go after like the frontline workers, but also that they would go after, just the federalized workforce in general, the unionized workforce in general. Unfortunately, that is the state of things there. There are unions that have filed lawsuits that they had, they are pushing back. Several unions have filed lawsuits challenging the legality of that executive order.
Mm-hmm.
Federal judges have also issued injunctions in some cases and temporarily preserved the protection, the bargaining rights of these workers. But unfortunately, a lot of those have also been overturned in appellate court, so they've had to reverse the injunction. But it's something that actually is a bright spot here, is that all of the House Democrats and even a few, I think 20 or so Republican representatives in the House, they all recently voted to repeal the executive order and restore federal workers' collective bargaining rights. So that is actually that's bipartisan. That's actually pretty impressive. The bill aims to return the rights to about 600,000 federal employees, the collective bargaining rights. That is a very impressive display of solidarity from the Democrats, but also of breaking with the Trump administration from these House Republicans. Unfortunately, it now has to go to the U.S. Senate, a Republican-controlled body that typically has not broken with this president to this point. So it faces a very uncertain path to passing, because it has to go through the Senate. But the fact that it happened at all shows that there is some interest in breaking with what the Trump administration is doing to attack workers. So there is hope there. There's a path of reversing this.
I know a lot of people don't want to hear it in times like this that are super crazy. But I mean, our institutions are the only thing that we really have in a realistic, outside of a conversation about that kind of goes farther than that. Our institutions are really all that we have. And I know it can feel like sometimes we don't have faith in them. But
yeah.
I mean, this, sending letters, emailing your representatives, making sure that these federal kind of proceedings are important and are in the news and are being looked at and watched. I mean, these are the ways that we can kind of fight back against this stuff. And even for myself, I could be very pessimistic and say, boy, I bet these 20 Republican Congress people probably just live in districts where a lot of federal employees work.
Right.
So it's probably not as big of a change of heart. I mean, and again, that's without background information. So, you know, do with that what you will. But that would be my assumption and guess. And so maybe there's not as much change in the hearts and minds as I would hope. But it's you're absolutely right. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah. Like at least I think that
something being done.
Yeah. Like you're probably right. But at least they decided, even with that, that there was a reason to side with their constituents over
party
fealty
lines.
To the you know, our God, King, Emperor Trump here. So unfortunately, we are out of time. And, you know, obviously we will continue keeping an eye on this story. But that is a ray of hope in a otherwise kind of bleak picture of where the state of the job market and the economy is for working Americans. So, yeah, we will come back to this as that develops or if there are new changes to that. But thank you so much for tuning in to Labor Radio here. I have been Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilland.
Have a wonderful
day. You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Don't know what to get your loved ones this season? Check out kboo.fm/merch to snag some KBOO swag to support community media in style. While you're shopping for gifts, you can make donations to help support KBOO's